But last week we began with that song by My Chemical Romance that Vincent really, really enjoyed. And when the 70s show was singing out, "We're all right," along comes My Chemical Romance singing, "I'm not okay, I'm not." And if you call it singing, you could call it something else maybe. But we learned last week that you know you're not okay when you long for someone to know that you're not okay. Maybe for someone to come alongside you, hug you, and say, like, "I know you're pretending to be okay, I know you're not, but I'm here for you if you ever need to talk." You know you're not okay when you hide what you're feeling. "I'm okay, nice friendly face, but behind it you're not." We kind of feel like, well, you know what, just leave me alone. Leave me alone. Don't let me say this again. If I say this again, I'm going to come across there and rip your head off. Just leave, back off. I'm close to the edge. You know that feeling? I've never had that. You experience anger that kind of like scares you. I'm going to go postal. We spoke about postal workers last week about going postal, getting really, really angry and doing something really dangerous. You know you're not okay when you find dangerous ways to deal with your pain. And I liked what Imta did Friday night. It's not maybe just inflicting pain on yourself. It could be other things. It could be other distractions. It was nice this morning in worship downstairs where we were encouraged to run away from anything that we run to, our comfort thing. For some of us, it might be chocolate or, you know, some form of medication, or even it could be friends, and we're all about friends in this place. But we find dangerous ways to deal with our pain. And, you know, it helps for a while. It does. It really does. But it doesn't really solve the problem and the issue. You know you're not okay when you experience deep depression. You can't get out of it. You just have the sad effect about you, and it's just horrendous. And you know you're not okay when you consider even ending your life. When we asked this at Greenside last week, most of the kids, just about every kid, put their hand up and said, "At some point in my life, I thought I'd be better off dead." And it was chilling. It was, whoa, you know, that's us. That's what we feel. We also learned about some steps to okay. It's not just going to be abracadabra. There's no mantra. There's no quick prayer that you got to pray. But there's a process, and you're going to find we're going to gel with this a whole lot during this series. It's not just going to be a once-off. But we need to admit to ourselves, "I'm not okay." You know, the starting point, if you were addicted to alcohol and you went to Alcoholics Anonymous, you would sit down in a circle and you would say, "Hi, my name is Mark. I'm an alcoholic." It's hard to do that, apparently. It's hard. It's like, you know, I was a workaholic once, and I know what it was like. I was defined and driven by my work, and I had to say, "I'm a workaholic," and that's like, but I want to be okay. You know, I'm like a believer, and, you know, I don't want to admit that. Admitting to ourselves sometimes is half the victory. And then speaking to Father. Father really understands and hears. You know, but it's hard, you know. Maybe we need to do some more stuff about how do I know that God is listening when I speak? And because he's not in the category of the tooth fairy and those other bunnies and things. You know what I mean? He's real. I mean, if you've had those moments of divine intervention in your life where you know that the divine is broken in, you know that, no, this is not, I haven't just made this up. This is not a hoax. I'm not pretending. There's too much evidence. There's evidence that demands a verdict, that there is a God. I'm going to speak to him. I'm also going to tell a friend. I'm going to grab someone and say, "What I'm going through is more than I can handle. Can you come alongside me and help me with this?" And if you tell one friend and they're not interested, well, tell another until you find the friend that's willing to listen. And if necessary, ask for help. If necessary, you know, if it's going to keep me alive or keep me sane or productive or a true follower of Jesus, I'm willing to sacrifice my pride and say, "I'm going to go to someone for a number of sessions and I'm going to get help." If it's so important, you know, if who I am in Christ and my sanity and my impact on the world, if that's so important, then I'm going to be willing to do whatever it takes. If I'm really messed up, I need to say, "Guys, I'm out of here. I'm going to get some help and some professional help," rather than just living in denial. And I think you would appreciate that if that was me. And then I need to focus on the future. If I get so wrapped up in the here and now, you know, I do a lot of photography, and there's two ways that you can set your lens, either to wide angle or narrow telefocus. And in wide angle, it's awesome because you get this whole the whole scenery. You know, you get the hills and the rocks and the waterfall. But if you want to photograph something really small, like a lizard or a butterfly or a bird, you need to zoom right in and go into like 300 millimeter or 600, 800 millimeter if you're rich enough and you can afford one of those long lenses. And what you do is you zoom right in. But you know what we do sometimes? We live zoomed in. And I'm so zoomed in on the fine details that all I'm seeing is this little logo on Lolu's jacket. And I can't see anything else. And all I see is that. And all that says is that you're just a dummy. And that's all I'm seeing. But meantime, James is just waiting for me to like tell me like, no, you're cool. You do that whole greeting thing when you run up and down in front of youth and you're working on that swagger, the Pepsi swag. But if I'm not hearing that, if I'm so zoomed in, when I zoom out and I hear input from different people, when I zoom out, I see my life as a whole and I realize my life is not going to end because she dumped me. She's the dirty, rotten dirtbag, not me. She's got issues that she needs counseling. I'm awesomeness. You know? And like other people are saying that, my mum and dad are saying that, my friends. I'm like, I'm not going to kill myself because you dumped me. That would just be stupid. I'm not going to deprive the rest of the world with my awesomeness. No? Focus on the future. Say it with me. I'm not okay, but I will be. I will be. I will be. I will be. No, like, sure, I will be. I'm not just saying this, I will be, like I will be, like honestly, I will be. But before we move on and even think about the survey we did, I want to say one or two things. Some things in life are just not okay, like death, suffering, tragedy, relocating across continents. Those things will never be okay. Don't ever pretend you're okay when those things happen. Do you remember Imta being shot on Friday night as he walked up and down the stage? You know, my friend dumps me. I'm okay. No, every one of those wounds you take, we're not Bruce Willis in Die Hard. We die easy. You shoot me, I hurt. This is not the movie. You can slap me, punch me in my face in a movie. CK, you make those false movies, and they just get up. You hit me in my face. I'm like, mom, someone hit me. Help. You know, I'm not Bruce Willis. You're not. You are not Sandra Bullock. You're not. You are a wimp when it comes to pain. You need love and care and support of your mates. You don't just pull yourself up even when you staple to the ground. That was such a cool movie you spoke about. I haven't seen it. I've got it maybe. I want to say also that getting to okay won't just happen. Just because you've sat through the series does not mean you're going to be okay. You're going to have to be intentional. You can go through the motions. You can go through this journey. And you can walk out that door each week and you can live exactly the same unless you decide that I'm going to work at this. I'm going to follow this process. I am going to admit. I am going to tell. I am going to ask. I am going to speak. I am going to focus. If I don't do that stuff, then forget. There's even actions maybe that I need to take. I need to act different. I need to think different. And some of you are in this journey, but you haven't yet started to take it in to you yourself and live with it and journey with it. It won't just happen. It's like putting that audio under your pillow and sleeping at night and thinking that that science teacher speaking while you sleep is going to get you A's. Dismal failure. Dismal failure. Dismal. Did I say dismal failure? Because I meant dismal failure, but like really dismal. So last week we do this whole survey with you guys. And we learned that there's a lot of issues that cause us to be not okay. Things like I'm going through change or there's health issues or pain or security and death. And this is, ever seen a pie chart? It's like when you cut sections of a pie and this represents kind of like how much and where it's weighted. We saw that even possessions and death and sexuality and loneliness. We started to get to some greater issues like relationships and image things, how I see myself, how other people see me, and stuff that's happening at school, which can actually relate to some of those other things because there's some connectedness. And we saw that family and friendships are probably the biggest issues that are causing us to be not okay. It doesn't mean we're going to ignore any of the others. And what it does mean is that today, I want to go after family. I want to see what it is about family that's causing us to be not okay. Now, not all of you wrote down something about family last Sunday. Am I right? No. So, some of you are going to need to be the hero. The super chick or the super guy, like that song, Hero by Super Chicks. You are going to need to be the ones that take what I share with you today, internalize it and say, okay, now when my friend tells me, you know, if I'm the tellee, you're the teller, I'm the tellee, when I hear and I tally up what you've said and I think about it, I'll have something to say to you, okay? So don't zone out because your family's okay. And I haven't met an okay family yet. But then again, I've only lived 50 years. I honestly haven't met a perfect family. Honestly, every family goes through stuff. Why? Because, look at your hand, because people like you are in that family. And don't you, you've got issues sometimes, don't you? Yeah, I mean, sometimes your hand's in a fist and you want to just punch someone. I'm not okay. And this is some of the things that I think we were saying. My parents fight a lot. Well, I fight with my siblings, my brother and sister. So it's their fault, but we fight. We're facing tough times. As the recession hit in our country, that's not a small thing, the pressure that comes out of that. Maybe my parents don't accept me. My parents are just jolly unrealistic. You know, they expect me to get like a D average in high school, and it's just like driving me nuts. As that stands for ducks or something. Ducks of the school, top of the school or something. My parent left me. Will you be okay after that? I doubt it. There was a video clip, a song a few years ago. I'm not going to play the song, but I'm play the introduction to the song by Michael, a friend of mine. Why is family a place that is so often not okay? What is it about families that often sometimes seem like they're out on a limb, or they just, it's coming apart at the seams, or, you know, there's maybe a cool patch, but suddenly it's like that story, and dad and son are at each other. You know, it starts out so romantic, doesn't it? It's like this love affair between two people. Next minute, you know, the wedding's all white and cute, and next minute they're fighting. Next minute, they're pregnant, so they're not fighting anymore for a while. Next minute, they're fighting, the poor kids are listening. Next minute, the kids are fighting in the back of the car. And you know, it's so cute when it happens. It is so cute when it's Bart Simpson and when it's in sitcoms, isn't it? And it's hilarious. It's like, oh, that is so cute, you know? It's really cute when brothers and sisters fight in, like, sitcoms and movies. But it's not cute, hey? When it happens in real life. You know, sometimes Debbie and I look at in movies and we'll say like, oh, they fight so cute, you know, they're so sweet when they fight it. Look how quickly they make up, you know. We kind of get out from behind our bunker and we throw a missile, we let it explode by the person, then we run behind the bunker, like, ha ha, gotcha, you know, and then I'm like sulking for like 3 hours because she said that and I didn't like what she said, or it was a tone of voice, or I thought I knew her, but she's a woman, and you don't know woman, they're from like another planet. You know, what are you thinking, Mr. Guy? You can't know a woman. It's going to take me a lifetime to figure out what I don't know. And I don't even know myself half the time. How many of you really know yourself? Yeah, sort of. Pepsi knows me, but I don't really know myself. There was a song not too long ago, I'm Okay, and I forgot to find this last week, and I'm going to let the songster tell us something about it.
The song is called I'm Okay, but really, I'm not. And it's a very real song.
Once upon a time, there was a girl.
It was a song about my father and my past in my childhood.
In her early years, she had to learn.
The vocal that you're actually going to hear on the record, I had a really hard time getting through. I was crying through it.
Me to see the pain cross my mother's face every time my father's fist put her in her place.
I got really, really sad. It's kind of self-explanatory.
Bruises fade by them, but the pain remains the same.
the bruises fade, you know, your emotional wounds do not go away.
As she had endured abuse, both her mom and her, for years growing up, she was disempowered and kind of just accepted it. What causes this? Anyone seen that sitcom, The War at Home? What causes this war at home? I want to suggest a couple things, and I think there's a lot more than this. But have you ever felt war at home around limited resource? If I had to bring a cake, and that's all we had, yeah, one chocolate cake, and I think I come and divide it up, right? How many of us would really eat enough chocolate cake with one chocolate cake? You know, when we do parties, we got to think like, well, how many people might be here on that night? 50, maybe 40, maybe 60. You know, and lately we like buy cupcakes and then we like think, oh, we're going to have enough, you know? And in a family, the resources of time, energy, of money are limited. I never thought this growing up. I never for a moment thought that my dad was anything other than an automatic teller machine. That he had endless resources, the ability to generate wealth. I didn't realize that he was on a fixed income. I wish I had. I wish I knew kind of now what was going on back there, because we fought about that sometimes. And even in our home, as we sort of like, we try and weigh up, okay, what are we going to cover this month? What can we do? What can we give to? And, which means, what can't I give to? And that inevitably makes you feel what? If I don't give you every one of your needs, you feel you don't love me. But it may not have nothing to do about that. It may just be there's not enough to go around. And unless we're working two or three jobs and have multiple income streams, it's going to be really difficult. So we fight over what we can share. Anyone relate to that? How many of you live in a home where you just, whatever you want just gets given to you? Every time you ask for something, because some of us want to be adopted in your family. You know, it's just like anything you want. There's that show, there's a Reverend Red or someone on TV at the moment, some sitcom thing that lives in this palace. What's that thing? And even he sometimes says like, honey, we don't have the money, but they got like 30 cars. They probably just got to sell one car and they can do whatever they like. But living in the suburbs in Joburg, that's probably not the case. And so limited resources. And that's not something that's going to change. If you need anything, just ask Imtan. He'll give you everything he wants, everything you want and need. I don't know. Maybe he's got limited resources. I know what. CK's got a brand new job. Why don't you ask her and she'll give you whatever you need. She'll give all of us whatever we need. Limited resources. Scarcity is the reality. What about personality differences? Do you find that you're different? You know? Are we different to each other? One of us, we want to be outdoors among people all the time and we get energized by that, but some of us get energized by being alone. How do those people live together? Only by accommodation and appreciation of each other. We're different. We wire differently. We think differently. By nature, some of us live at a fast pace, some of us live at a slow pace. Some of us are just trying to run to play catch up all the time because it is so difficult to stay up with people who are faster than us. And so as we put this together in a family, chances are you're going to find that there's like four or five different personality types. One of the personality indicators, the Myers-Briggs indicator, says that there's 16 different personality types that will manifest in life. And there's even some variations of that. Some of the others would multiply that exponentially. We are so different. And I wonder if maybe God hasn't put us together, not so much to make us happy, but to make us holy. There was a book by that title some years ago, Marriage is Not to Make You Happy, but to Make You Holy. I wanted to burn that book. I thought it was about being happy. God, didn't you bring into my life to make me happy? Didn't God bring me into her life to make her happy as well? Well, yes, to some extent. But what if he's designed to make us better? More loving, more gentle, more patient. How do you get more patient? You pray, God, give me patience now. I need patience, obviously. What about unmet expectations? When I expect someone to do something for me, when I expect them to respond in a certain way, but maybe they wrapped up with their own needs. You know, I come and share something life-changing with you, but you're like preoccupied and you're thinking about that suit you're going to wear to your matric dance. Or dress. And I don't get the response that I want. expectations. I expect this, but my friends get it. Well, one of them. Well, I don't know if she gets it all the time, but she got it once. So I expect, and my expectations are unmet, and so I lash out at you. And if we don't clarify that, what are our expectations? Maybe we need to negotiate in the home around expectations. Hey, hang on. I think your expectations might be unrealistic. We were watching a movie last night called The Blind Side. You have to see it. Like yesterday, about Big Mark, who's not Big Mark, but he's Michael. Thanks to Bianca for loaning to her. I think it's going to like change our life forever. But who we are and what expectations are put on us. And here, this guy, they were trying to force him into one understanding in his academics. And even the football coach was trying to get him to do something. But you know what he scored high at? Protection. And he was this like defender in this football game. And when his mum, his adopted mum, his foster mom, came and whispered in his ear and said, you know how you will defend anyone in your family and you will like do anything to keep them safe? One day there's an accident and he throws his arm out and he stops the airbag from going off so that it doesn't kill the little kid sitting next to him in the seat of his car. And he's that strong. And she says, use your protection. His family, protect him. He's your family. She says that to his whole football team. You should have seen this guy. Suddenly, he took down everyone. No one was able to stand against him. The one time, he just kept on running with the guy and just threw him into the stands. And the other guy was a huge dude. His uniqueness, his specialness. And when we function with people according to who they are and what they're best wired for, suddenly, when I treat you as a unique individual, suddenly it goes differently. We have different values, different likes, different interests. A while ago as a family, we learned that we all love outdoors, and we started like heading out to the outdoors a whole lot. And I stumbled into this crazy fanatical thing about birding even that seems to have bitten old Keenan a bit. And as we did this as a family, it was awesome, and we would go to all these places, and then I'd have one of my kids, I won't say which one it is, but he's like 18-ish, and he's like, I don't think I want to go today. But like, what do you mean go today? Now I'm going to stay home. But like, this is what we do together. This is family time. It's awesomeness. It's ayoba. It's like, no, I think I'm staying home. And then little birdman one day says, my six-year-old, like, I think I'll stay home today and play games with my big brother. And I was, to heck with you then, and you. And then we're on the way to the Kruger the night before, and we're all packed, and the old, I won't say who it is, but it's the 18-year-old. He says, like, I'm not going for that four-day holiday. I'm not going to church planting school and then off to the Kruger. I don't want to go with. I'm like, huh? This is like what we do together, you know? But suddenly we started to realize, like, we have different interests. We have different values. And it's okay. My dad would have just slapped me upside my head. I'm thankfully that we live in a different age. If your dad still slaps you upside the head, then speak to him, too, because he's big. We have different interests, and it's going to take a bit of accommodation, a bit of give and take. So what are your interests? Okay, I'll come do that with you. I'll network with you and try and beat you, but you won't beat me because I'm too old to play computer games. Different values, interests, different things that you're passionate about. Are we all passionate about the same thing in this room? Heck no, we're not. How are we going to survive the war? I mean, spare a thought for that little dude. How are we going to survive the war? Here's some things that I want you to take away, and we're going to workshop this on Friday night. I want you to know that God put you there. You're not a mistake. God designed families. God sets the lonely in families. Psalm 68, verse 4. It's God's idea. God has put people where they should live in Acts chapter 17. Jeez, you've got to be sharp in this place. You make a mistake in this place, you will be challenged. The Mars Hill incident, Vincent, James, and others. I've just been careful. You can see how careful we are after Friday night. Don't. John and John the Baptist are not the same person. We now know that. We all know that. Even in Tawalanga knows that now. Know that God has put you in your family. You're not a mistake. And guess what? You're there for a while. You're there forever. There's Bart and Lisa and their children. And they are like 50 now. One day, Bart will be not the kid anymore, scoping loose. He will be the dad. And my parents are always my parents. My dad can't walk up a flight of stairs. He lives in a townhouse and he crawls upstairs, literally. And it's like traumatic. I want to put an escalator or get him a rocket pack, jet pack thing that he can go up. I used to play a game on the computer that you could just do rocket pack. It's awesome. So I'm sure I can get dad one of those. Some of you are thinking set it on full and then he goes through the roof, but I wasn't thinking that. But no matter how much they are in their 80s, I'm still going to remember that they're still my mum and dad. They never won't. You know, even if a parent had to die, my grandpa is dead, but you know what? He's still, and my grand, they're still an influence in my life. Okay, I don't really go to their grave and speak to them and that sort of thing, but I remember who they are, and I pay them that sort of respect. Respect. Respect parents. I didn't make that up. That's one of God's desires for how we live long in this land. So somehow in the midst of what I'm going through, I'm going to respect my parents. Somehow when I disagree them and I stand up to them, and if I get help and intervene and call child welfare and get them in, there's a way that I'm still going to show respect to who my mum and dad is. And respect obviously changes over the years and how it's shown, but I'm going to show respect. You know, I'm going to accept they're not perfect. And maybe that's why we enjoy watching The War at Home, because we actually know it's a mirror of life in us and society. Even the worst part of The Simpsons parenting, it's like, wow, we do that sometimes. Let's not do that. Let's be different. In this show, every now and then there's a cutaway where he or the mum or the kids speak what they're really thinking. You know how sometimes we're dishonest? Hey, James, nice jacket. You know, and then like, what a horrible jacket. If we could have like this honesty meter going around us and the alarm goes off every time I lie. Hey, James, how you doing? Nice to see you. Bop, 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 bop. Oh, sorry, I don't want to see you today. No, no, no. So the music plays nicely when we tell the truth. I hope that doesn't happen. We need more prophetic people who can say, hey, you didn't say the truth there. Accept that families aren't perfect. Why? Because people aren't perfect. There is no perfect family. The more I connect with families, the more I realize underneath the exterior, there's real challenges and real difficulties. You're not the only one. The vast majority of us on Friday night stepped up to this line when Imta said something like, how many of you were angry with your parents this week? Huh? There was more people on that line for that issue than anything else. There was more people on that line than for how many of you ate ice cream this week. You didn't ask that, but if you had, there's more people. I want you to know that conflict will happen. It's a picture of Pepsi. Conflict will happen. It will. There will be conflict. That's why we've still got an army, even though we're not in a war, because conflict will happen. One day, we're going to be fighting someone. It may be jellyfish. It may be, I don't know, someone south of our borders on St. Helena Island or something coming to attack us. But conflict will happen, and we need to look for the positive in conflict. There is positive in conflict. There are times when we've been through tough times, there's been times of discipline, and in that moment, there is love like there wasn't before. When I'm corrected, once I'm past my male stubbornness, I actually love you for it. I'm thankful for it, because I know I'm a better person. At the moment, I want to smack you in love, hard, lovingly, but I'm going to find the positive in what I'm going through, and more from Christina as we wrap in a minute. And get help if you need it. If it is so traumatic, then you need to do, here's some things maybe you could do. You could maybe admit to yourself that this thing in my family is beyond me. So I'm just thinking aloud, maybe some things I've thought of just quickly. I'll think of another one. Speak to father about it. Maybe tell a friend about it. This is new to you. You should be writing this down. Third, four, ask for help. Hey, I need help with this. I need out of here. Then focus on the future. This isn't the last word. We're going to switch that for one more clip.
I've spoken very openly about growing up in a household where there was a lot of abuse and there was a lot of domestic violence, and you know, seeing what my mom went through, what I went through as a child, you know, not feeling like I had a safe place to go home to. It's called I'm Okay, but there are still many, many scars that I still battle with on an everyday basis, that I still try to struggle, that I'm still struggling with. So It's a constant healing process for me, but I'm so thankful for it because through every hardship like this, there's such a light at the end of the tunnel. And for me, it has just made me that much more of a stronger person. I'm so much stronger because of it.
Y'all, I didn't expect her to say something like that. When I watched this, I just stopped and I thought, no ways, how can you say that? I do want to say that, what about parents? And what you might want to do is download this from our Facebook group and print it out and give it to your mums and dads, okay? Because I want to speak as a parent, and it's going to take 5 minutes, 3 minutes. I want to say that my wife and I are responsible to God for the way we parent our kids, and he's going to fry us or affirm us and love us and hug us, depending on what we like. That should put the fear of God into any parent, any caregiver. We are responsible to God for how we do that. Secondly, you know what? We honestly, genuinely want what is best for our kids. We do. Now, it gets messed up sometime in the delivery, but that's what we desire. We want what's best for our kids. Mom and Dad, are you wanting what's best for me? Is this best for me or you? And sometimes parents have to ask themselves, why am I pushing my kid to do this? Is it for their benefit or mine? Why am I forcing you to be an accountant, Dad? You know, why was my dad doing that? That wasn't me. I hate figures. We are committed to love our kids and be their parents always. No matter what. No matter what you come out with, we will always be there, even many years from now. One of the things we try to work on is raising adults and not kids. We don't want to raise you to be kids. We want to raise you to be adults. So we want to give you responsibility. We want to allow you to do things as you gain independence. We're not raising children. We're raising kids, and that's changed how we operate. We're going to love our kids even when we have to discipline them with clubs and knob kitties and shumbucks. You know that old saying, parents say, well, that's going to hurt you a lot more than me. Well, yes, but then put away that baseball bat. But it's important that if there's discipline, it's redemptive. It's for a noble purpose. And we have to carefully manage our limited resources. There's not a lot to eat there, some mushy peas, and I don't know what's in that cup. But we are responsible to manage that. I used to probably drink about a liter of milk every time I walked past the fridge growing up. And I never thought that Dad actually had to buy that milk. I thought there was a cow out back maybe in the garden that looked like a jungle. And Mom just went out and milked the cow, because what else does Mums do at home? In the 1950s, carefully managing our limited resources. Here's what we want to do Friday night. And I trust that many of you will, if you do come from Newcastle for Friday night, please don't bring the cold weather. Okay? We want to gel with this a bit more Friday night.
Awesome. Give it up for Mark. Give it up for Mark. All right. Guys, Friday night, please come. Today, we've opened up. I think some of you have been thinking about some stuff. Friday night, we've got a whole lot more time. So we've got ample opportunity to actually get into the stuff. You know, Sundays we use just to kind of say, you know, it's out there. We know about it. We saw the survey. We read the stuff. So it's out there. But Fridays, come if you're brave enough to actually stop, pause. Because like last Friday, we're actually gonna go into the stuff and talk about the different things with one another and actually go through those steps and see how practically they work. Are you guys keen for that? I know it's a little bit scary. I know some of the stuff we face at home are a little bit heavy, but that's what this series is about. So if you guys are keen, please come on Friday. Bring your issues. Don't leave them at home.